This is CliffCentral.com.
So it wasn't an easy ride for Malusi Gigaba yesterday, because quite apart from the fact that I suppose he had to deliver this this budget speech, the first time he's done this as minister, he also had to put up with the EFF heckling and complaining and telling him he should get out of here. In fact, the EFF walked out of the out of the parliament during the budget speech. Do you want to hear that quickly? Just listen to this. Here's EFF MP Mbuyiseni Ndlozi. Listen to this quickly. Balegambete, I think, is very much involved as well.
To legitimize criminals in the name of rules, Mr. Mutembu. You couldn't stop corruption from that side. It defeated you. Now you want to bring it to parliament with rules. Gigaba is a Gupta stooge. He's there to steal the people's resources. That is what he is.
Yo, and that was just a taste of what went on in Parliament. But then eventually he did get underway and did start talking about it. And Anthea Gardner is here with us this morning, not for the money shot, no, but for a budget analysis, a post-budget discussion. And there's lots to talk about, right?
Oh, wow. Is there lots to talk about? Whoa, there's lots to talk about, but there's nothing substantial.
Yeah, he didn't have very much to play with, this guy.
No, he didn't, did he? Hey?
No.
What do you mean to play with? You mean he didn't have any enough levers or rabbits to pull out of the hat?
He didn't announce anything that that surprised us.
What? Yeah, exactly.
He didn't say anything that was newsworthy.
Wasn't that the surprise, though, the lack of saying something about it? As a taxpayer, did you not sigh a sigh of relief?
Okay.
So you've got another, how many months is it? Till the
6 months.
4 months, 6 months.
Yeah, until they do come after your money.
Exactly.
All right, but here are a couple of things. So I actually did pay attention yesterday. And maybe these are some of the questions that you can answer for us. And Anthea, we'll start with you because Justice is on his way in. Apparently, he held to Pravin Gordhan's expenditure forecasts almost to the letter. The budget would likely have been produced in exactly the same way by Pravin if he was still there. Unless you'd like to make an argument that he would have slashed spending estimates, which I doubt. But what do you think of that?
Yeah, that's right. He hasn't done anything very much differently, has he? He kind of... It was just 27 pages of nothing, really.
I mean, he kept the same spending projections.
Well,
though arguably, we could say that the SOEs have now got more out of control than they were before. He mentioned the NHI, which we can get into just now, but he didn't mention nuclear.
But his job is not to repeat what Pravin Gordhan said. His job is to look at it and say, where are we on the path?
Yeah, but he hasn't. This is
and
not
what
someone,
are we going to do?
This is not someone who has ideas.
You've pretty much spotted it, right? This man has no idea. Listen, he started off really well, I think. You know, he spoke all the right words. Fiscal consolidation. He has a good understanding of what's going on, or he seems to project that he has a good understanding of what's going on. He said, the problem with the budget is that, or why we are where we are, is because we don't have GDP growth. Right. And he said we need to boost confidence. He really, when he started, I was just like, wow, he's got it. And then he did nothing. and then the other 25 pages were nothing. Yeah.
Well, there were a few things. Do you want to get into specifics or do you want to just
do a
general thing first? Okay. Specifics. Apparently, and I was shocked by this, outstanding unpaid provincial bills to service providers are standing at 30 billion rand and growing at 30% year on year. That is terrifying.
There's no money.
Government getting services from people, small businesses, big businesses in South Africa, not paying them.
Yeah.
Estimated payouts for medical negligence claims have grown at an average rate of 45% since 2012-2013 and amounted to 1.2 billion rand in 2016-17. The contingent liability arising from claims against the state at the end of 2016-17 totaled an estimated 56 billion rand.
Yeah. I don't know what to say to these numbers, Gareth. They're shocking. They're horrifying.
I mean, if that is the amount in negligence claims... Can you imagine if we have a national health insurance, what kind of trouble we'll be in? Imagine this NHI that they're proposing. If medical negligence payouts already total 56 billion, I don't want to be Aaron Motsoaledi who's dealing with that kind of problem, because this is meant to help cover costs, not create new ones.
Yeah. So you've gone kind of straight into the detail of the budget, right? But just from a very much a broader strategic perspective, the fact that the shortfall was 50.8 billion rand, that was a shock. And that the debt to GDP ratio is 4.3%, my blood ran cold, because I'm looking at it as if I was a credit rating agency. And I'm just going to turn on and go, so you mentioned fiscal consolidation in the first page of your budget, and then you did nothing about it. You have to understand that you have to do something about it. And he kept making excuses and saying that we need GDP growth and therefore we can't constrain expenditure, because if we constrain expenditure, it's anti-growth. And then... where are you going to get the money for the expenditure? So the money, and so he didn't say, he spoke like someone who had a surplus, right? Who had money to play around with. And then he didn't make a plan for how to generate more revenue or more income.
Anthea, you mentioned earlier that there is no money when Gareth was quoting one of the stats about how much is owed to services provided to government. Where did that money go? Why do we not have... Why do we...
enter Justice Malala.
Why do we not have the money?
All right, let me welcome Justice Malala. It is the Burning Platform. It's sort of an extended post-budget discussion today. Justice, how are you?
All good. Well, is it all good?
Well, we've gone straight in for the jugular already here in terms of analyzing this budget. Anthea has quite a lot of very vociferous comments to make. Mabali's question about where is the money? Justice, do we have a political analysis of where the money might go?
I totally agree with Anthea was saying earlier on. You talk about fiscal consolidation, all these fancy terms and so forth. But basically, what you're seeing with this budget is that the money's been spent and the money has been mismanaged. So it's when you say you've got a 50 billion rand shortfall, it means you arrive at home and there's Mabale and her partners expecting her to say, here's the money. And, the partner looks at the money and says, oops, sorry, there isn't enough money. Where's the rest of the money you're supposed to bring home? And basically, it means you're broke in the house. You can't get enough money in and you've got all these responsibilities. So... basically, SA Inc. right now and Malusi Gigaba yesterday confirmed to us what we've been saying for the past 10 years. Jacob Zuma has mismanaged the economy. So you've got a shortfall that is worse than what you saw in 2009 when the world went into the dung. Okay, you were in trouble then. And now you're back, you're worse. And this is a time when, look at all emerging markets, look at OECD countries, everyone's saying, I'm seeing a green shoot there, it's going to get better, it's going to be 2%, 3% growth, or maybe even more, 4%. We are going down, we are going the opposite direction, 0.7% GDP growth. So where's the money, Mabale? The money? It's a tough question to get back home and get asked that question. But basically, we have... it's down the drain. One of the best graphics to come out of yesterday was one showing how we gave our civil servants, our public servants, massive wage increases. So we've spent a lot on our public servants, that to the extent that Anthea yourself in the public sector are paid on a straight basis. A worker at the same level in the private sector would be in the public sector would be paid more than someone in the private sector. It's like, so we paid people too much. We bailed out SOEs that should have been sold ages ago, and all that money we now know went to the Guptas via Trillion Capital, via all these other outfits. So we mismanaged. We put money down the drain. That's what we did.
So someone called Hilton Tarrant on Twitter said it like this. If South Africa was a household, our monthly income is 9,946 rand. Okay, just take the zeros off. Expenses are 11,779 rand. Are you following? Interest payments, 1,361 rand. That means we've got a 1,830 rand shortfall, and our total debt is 253,050 rand.
And on top of that...
So if that was your household now, you'd be a little bit nervous.
Yeah, because we have no plan to increase the income. So he said, okay, that's the problem. And we obviously can see that we've got a shortfall, but now we need to increase income. How are we going to do it? There was no plan yesterday. There was no action. There was nothing. There was no idea about debt stabilization. So you read out an interest payment. I can't remember what the number was. But that's exactly where South Africa is. And then the market reaction yesterday, the market looked at it and went, oh, I don't like this very much. So your government bond, your 10-year government bond went out to 9.8%. And guess what happens when you get downgraded by the ratings agencies? That yield or your interest payments increase. So it's just going to get worse.
Anthea, we've spoken about this before here. And it's when we're sitting here in the studio today and I want to go get a loan from a financial services company somewhere. And they say, oops, Justice, you're paying how much on your numbers? It's 1,300 rand.
Mm-hmm. That was the interest repayment.
Interest.
On an income of about 9,000.
Yeah, right. And so you're living way beyond your means. Mm-hmm. And so, sorry, Baba, you can't get a loan. What's going to happen to me? I'm going to go. There's a lady downstairs who does other jobs in the building, but also doubles up as a mashonisa. And before long, I'll be going to her and saying, ish, you know, can I get a little something? And her interest is 50% on whatever she gives me. So already you can see what the reaction of the markets was. Before long, these guys will be going off to a mashonisa because no one's going to give them cash. So we are in so much trouble. If you take this down to my level, to my earnings and my household, South Africa is becoming essentially unbankable. I can't give you money because I'm not sure you'll be able to pay it.
I hope the ratings agencies are not listening to you because that's exactly what they're thinking. Are you or are you bankable? Because if you're not bankable... your junk status, right?
Well, the thing about Malusi Gigaba for me that was interesting was that he came in and, you know, I kick him around every so often and say he's all this and all that. But one thing he did do, the first half of that budget policy statement was very honest. He said, we can't lie, we can't sugarcoat it. Here are the numbers. And when he said the numbers, whether it's the budget shortfall and it's all that, the revenue shortfall and all that, you sat there and wanted to hold on to your heart because it was so horrific. Okay? So he did good there.
Well, the president slept. He didn't. He wasn't. You were holding it to your heart. The guy who's in charge of our country wasn't ready.
It must mean everything's okay. If the president is confident enough to take a nap, it's all fine.
But you were saying that he started off being honest.
He was very honest, and those numbers are. If I'm at whatever ratings agency looks at this, and they come back in November. I'm not sure that we can spin them that, you know, as the ANC always says, you know, tomorrow will be better than today. If you look at what you were talking about earlier, about just that, when Nelson Mandela walked into the Union buildings in 1994, I think our debt was something like 49%. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Successive ministers, successive administrations, Mandela, Mbeki's administration, took that down. Under Trevor Manuel, we had debt to GDP ratio of 27%.
Yeah, 27.
And now we are projecting that by 2020 we'll be at 60%. Mm-mm. I mean, we are falling into debt, and it's taken 10 years. From 2009, when the first Jacob Zuma administration came in, to today, 2017, we're already at 50%. Heading fast, in 3 years' time, we'll be at 60%. So what's happening here is it's not a good story to tell. It's a very bad story to tell.
There were really two things that everybody was hoping would come out of this, or at least that everybody had thought might be coming out of this. I don't think anyone was hoping for the first one. A tax increase because government are scrambling for money now. And they have to scratch everywhere they can to get a little bit somewhere. There were people talking about how there might be a VAT increase, and that might still come in the budget in February. There might be a new marginal personal income tax, which could even go up to 50%. All of that didn't happen because a lot of people saying that government are very nervous about a tax revolt. And the other thing that was going to come out, you can comment on that one in a second, the other thing that we were hoping would come from this would be the conditions around the bailouts for these SOEs. What was the agreement? We'll give you this money, we'll guarantee you to X amount, which is what they've done before in government. But then what does SAA have to do? What's their plan? How do these things get implemented in some way that results in not another bailout in another year's time? Those things didn't happen. Do you want to comment on either of them?
I actually want to comment on the tax, because all the way through the speech, I was sitting there feeling like I was being set up. I'm being set up for something. Something is coming, right? And so I get that they're worried about the tax revolt, and that they want to keep the ANC is in a precarious position, and they want to play nice with voters at the moment. So probably they won't raise tax. I mean, so they won't raise VAT. But I would have thought, and I still think, obviously, in February, is that they would have looked at wealth tax. They would have looked at raising the marginal tax. So basically, he did actually, in the beginning of his speech, talk about redistribution of resources and moving resources from the wealthy to the poor. And that's what made me think, uh-oh, here it comes. He's coming for me. Well, not that I'm incredibly wealthy, but he's coming for you. You know,
it's anybody who's saved more than they owe.
Yeah, and you have a private medical aid. I'm going to take away your tax credits. It's coming. So from a taxpayer's point of view, there was a bit of reprieve for the next 4 months or 6 months, whatever it is. So, but it's coming.
Yeah, I have to say, I kept on thinking that. Why he just kicked everything out by another three to 4 months, almost as if he didn't want to act. So a lot of stuff was, okay, there'll be a president's committee that will deal with it, or there'll be this, and in February we'll make an announcement, and so forth and so forth. So I think that, yes, I have to agree with you. A tax hike has been on the cards, whether it's the Davis, Judge Dennis Davis's committee that had spoken about VAT and so forth. I think that this is it. I think that February is going to be very, very painful because he's got no option. He's painted himself into a corner, or the administration, you can't blame him for all of it, has painted itself into a corner. So it's almost like I'm just leaving. Have a nice Christmas, but when you get back in Feb,
thanks.
I'm coming for you. And you're right. Hanging all over that budget was, we don't have money. And to your point earlier, where's the money gonna come from? And it's gonna come from you and me and all of us in the room, because there is nowhere else that this administration can get money from. So
this is something that's bothered me for the longest time. We've got politicians here. Most of these people have never earned an honest day's work in their life.
You should see, it's very hard work in those committees, you know.
You just sit and talk, and you don't produce anything necessarily of value that can be measured in the market, like people who do a service or create a product or any of that stuff. And what bothers me is that he says things, and this is extraordinary, because if you look through the document, there are one or two things that just revealed to me a kind of naivety about how things work. For example, Malusi said that they will repurchase the telecom shares that they sell at a later date. You know, as if they'll just stay the same price.
Yeah.
and that's – so what you're doing is you're just circulating the money in his mind. It's not getting more or less valuable. He doesn't understand these – I'm not an economist backside. I won't even pretend
but
to understand.
But I'd like to hear Anthea's view on this, because I also – I sat there and said, what – so you say out of the blue over the past 3 months – that no, we're gonna sell our telecom stake, and telecom rushes off because it's a listed company. There's a cautionary and all that, and everyone in the market is, oh, they're gonna sell telecom, and you know, telecom makes government what 900 million rand per year just in dividends. It's good money.
It's a cash cow.
It's a fantastic piece of investment. And so, you know, everyone's, oh, yeah, they're going to sell. And then, no. The cautionary is withdrawn, nothing. And then, boom, again, you go back. It's almost like you need to say, this is my plan. This is why it works. And stick to it. So I was surprised by that. I think the cautionary was withdrawn last week.
It's been back and forth.
It's been back and forth. So it's, oh, I'm on, I'm off, I'm on, I'm yeah. off, I'm on, I'm off. What's...
So from an asset manager's point of view, it's a listed share. Do I or don't I include Telkom in my portfolio? And we did include it a couple of months ago because there was a nice dividend and we did what we call a dividend strip. So we like the dividend on the share. But because government is playing with us, we're not sure about it. And the stake that government holds is so big that it will negatively impact the market. So I bought some Telkom shares, I took my dividend, and then I sold them. Thanks for playing. and that's exactly what the rest of the market is doing and what will happen with a share, because we're all selling at the same time, because we know that government's going to be selling, we're suppressing the share.
Yeah.
So once government stops selling, I mean, there is a chance if Telkom is a good company and continues to be a good company, it will actually spike. And so what we're saying is that actually government's now said that they're going to sell their Telkom share, and they're probably going to sell it at the low of the year.
Which would be the worst time to sell.
I know, right?
And then they'll try to buy them back when they're very expensive, which is madness. I mean, it's just, this is basic fundamental. I'm not, this is really simple stuff to understand.
But also think about this. Telkom for a long time was the SAA of the government's portfolio. And then suddenly you had two amazing people at the top and other people in the organization, Sipho Mabuza and Sipho Maseko and Jabu Mabuza. These are extraordinary people, amazing people. They arrive there and they turn this thing around. It's making good cash. I'm holding on to this thing, okay?
Instead, you want to bail out SAA.
No, you want to take the good money and throw it at the bed. You know, it's. I don't understand. I don't understand.
Justice, I think you're getting a little emotional.
Okay, I'm going to stop.
I'm going to make it worse for you. One of the other things that came out of this, government are projecting that social grant recipients will rise from 17.3 million people to 23.5 million people by 2030. Now, if you are confident in your economic turnaround strategy, that would demonstrate a failure of that economic turnaround strategy. You must choose which side of the argument you're on here. If we're adding more social grant recipients to the pile, then we're not sorting out the economy, right?
If you're sorting out the economy, you're creating jobs. If you're creating jobs, people get off social grants. The idea of a social net is that those of us who are not able, who are not fortunate enough to be able to earn for ourselves, we will not allow them to fall into absolute dire poverty and penury. Now, when you say no, we're just going to see more and more people. You're saying more and more people are going to fall through the employment net and go get to that level where they have to queue and receive help from the government. You should be saying, as I said, I think Malusi Gigaba's and National Treasury's numbers are very honest, and for that we have to be grateful. But if you're saying by 2020 GDP growth, if we like, it will be 1.9%, think of the employment creation produced by such poor growth. It means that more people will be out on the street. It means that with the rise in population and all the correlations to that, it means that more of our people will get poorer. And some of us will just be hanging on. So it's a statement of failure that is so large, that is so debilitating. One has to stop and say, what kind of scenarios can I paint on the basis of 20 million people, 2030, receiving social grants? What am I trying to plug? Am I trying to stop social disruption, upheavals? What's going on there? But as a statement, it's a statement of failure. We should be getting people off. it's a great success that we went from 2 million to 17 million people in 23 years. But we should be now saying more and more of our people will be absorbed into jobs. People are not dying anymore from lack of ARV drugs. They should be in jobs. There should be this and so forth. And that number should be coming down. There should be, by 2030, parents should be looking after their own kids. A large chunk of that 17.3 million are child grants, for example. If you're saying it's going to increase, you're saying more people will still not be able to look after their children. There's something fundamentally wrong with saying at the beginning of your speech that, you know, we'll turn things around and so forth, and then say my projections look
show
so
that we
terrible.
Won't. So, Anthea, SOEs.
The fact that we've allocated, just was laughing because you're giving me the tough question.
I mean there are no conditions.
Allocated another 3.8 billion rand last night, right? So, thanks. I have no money, but here's some
Who
more money.
Who was the lucky recipient? Was it SAA?
SAA and the post office. Yep. South African post office. So, as you say, good money after bad, right? And what do you do with it? I don't know.
Do SAA, I see they appointed a new CEO. Justice, what do we know about the new CEO of SAA?
I'm actually, okay, I know I've been very, very negative on some of this stuff. But actually, I think something good has happened. If you look at SAA, okay, Dudu Mieni was the chair of SAA until a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
In that time, SAA has gone from... people forget that SAA used to make money. There was a gentleman called Kaya Ngula who arrived at SAA after it had been gone through the ringer with Coleman Andrews and others. He managed to turn it around. He went mm-hmm. to a turnaround specialist, a consulting firm. They came over. I think they were Canadian. They came over and helped him turn it around and so forth and so forth. Lo and behold, SAA was making money. Kaya Ngula was at the top, and then he was ousted. After that, we had successive CEOs and boards that didn't work. When Jacob Zuma came in, it became even worse. When Malusi Gigaba was public enterprises minister, he got rid of a very good board. On that board sat people like Corruption Watch's David Lewis, Cheryl Carolus, all sorts of amazing, incredible, high-achieving people who didn't need to get a board fee from SAA, but said, we'll do this because it's good for our country, for tourism, all that, to have an SAA. It's been a disaster. It's been an absolute and total disaster. Every year, every 6 months, we've thrown money at SAA.
Right.
Nhlanhla Nene tried to get rid of Dudu Mieni. He was fired. Des van Rooyen Shem, he didn't even get to read a medium-term budget policy statement. So, you know, that's a bit of a bummer. Then along came Pravin Gordhan, and he also got fired because he, remember last year, he gave her 1 year. This year, when it's time to go, Malusi Gigaba can't even get her out of her seat, so has to extend her tenure. But finally, to his credit, she's gone. She's left the building. There's a new CEO coming in. There's a new chair of the board, J.B. Magwaza, I think is his mm-hmm. name. There is a new chief financial officer. The CEO starts on November 1. I understand that there's a turnaround specialist coming to joining up. So actually, you know, I'd like to say, I think if the vultures, the state capture lot, walk away from SAA, it actually has a chance to be turned around. It will be hard. They're going to have to fire thousands of people, but it can be turned around. It can become a good business. If the new CEO comes from Vodacom, can't remember his name, Jahana, I think is his surname. Mm-hmm. If he's given a chance, if this new CFO, if the new board is given a chance. Actually, I think SAA can be turned around. But think of the good money we've thrown at that mm-hmm. entity. And all of it is because we couldn't. A good board was kicked out. boards that were compromised, individuals that were compromised were put in there. So Mabale says, where did the money go? That's where the money went. It went to politically connected people who had no interest in making sure that actually this entity works. So I just hope, you know, I hope for those poor people, new people at SAA, that Atul Gupta doesn't start sniffing around again, because that would be the major disaster. I hope that we'll stop seeing money, billions thrown at SAA and all these other SOEs. But it's a tough one, and understand why you know, Anthea loves nervously when you start talking about SOEs. It's a mess. Well, it's a big mess.
And, and Justice, isn't the point that even this turnaround strategy is going to take a lot of money? And because of the time and the money and everything. And my concern, of course, from a financial point of view, is that we are breaching debt covenants. And that means that the ratings agencies look at that and say, well, you're allowed to borrow so much and no more. And the minute you do, and we've asked you not to spend on these SOEs, but you're going to, actually, it's time. We need to stop this.
No, you're absolutely right. We should have pulled the plug on some of these SOEs a long time ago. They just don't work. I mean, what is happening with this new CEO, CFO, the new chair, should be done by some business which has bought SAA for one rand. That's what should happen. Why have we... Actually, it would be interesting to just look at this budget, this midterm budget, the one before and the one before and all that, and say, how much over the past 10 years have we absolutely thrown away on SAA? The debts that, and you know, it's like being an addict that, oh no, it will get better, I'm going to stop tomorrow. And then tomorrow, I'm back on the source. And I'm going to stop tomorrow. And I'm back on the source. It's what's happening with SAA. The SAA is an addict. And it's been an addict for a long time. And instead of saying, that's fine, no further, we keep on saying, oh, here's some money for your lunch. But knowing that, wink, wink, lunch is actually, you know, let me get a bottle of gin or maybe two or maybe three. And this is a problem.
And you heard Gigaba's justification yesterday in the budget speech. He was saying, well, actually, the SAA does so well to promote tourism. So tourism is our goose that will lay the golden egg in future. But to put the price on it, I was thinking, well, the amount of money you've spent on SAA for marketing South Africa, I'm not sure that marketing budget got blown.
It was what's that expression you like to use? Piss poor. It was such a piss poor reason that I sat there thinking, Guy, you're joking. Uh-huh. Because nothing that SAA does. Let me tell you, I fly SAA all the time. I flew SAA from London to Joburg about in August. SAA, that flight is chock full, okay, of people coming to South Africa. This is their first experience of South Africa, the charm and beauty of our beautiful country. And let me tell you what SAA does. The TVs don't work, okay? now, there are kids. Now, I'm an old geezer. I'm sitting there thinking, why? They must read a book. But those kids don't want to read a book. They want to watch some mindless movie and then have a meal and fall asleep and wake up in a beautiful, sunny country called South Africa. Those kids, there were 4 2-year-olds screaming at air stewards and stewardesses, where's my TV? It doesn't work. My TV. Now, you've just thrown 3 billion. Last month, we threw how much billion at them? When
4 point something.
You know, in June, Standard Chartered said, I want my money back. We threw 2 billion at them. I mean, just this year, we must have spent 8 billion, 7 billion on SAA. That's marketing spend for South Africa.
Exactly.
I mean, if I had 7 billion rand to attract the world to South Africa, I'd be doing way better than we're doing right now. So the whole thing is not even thought through. Anyway, they should be sold, but they won't be sold. So you're right. The problem is that you are breaching financial covenants. You're breaching the idea of it, and it's will be punished for it. So I mean, I don't know what your reading of the numbers is. But I think that the ratings agency will punish us for that. But that means that our credit rating is so bad, everything's going to become more expensive, even borrowing to throw money at SA.
So this is what happens. I mean, R.W. Johnson wrote that book that was not very optimistic about what the end game is. The end game is we have to go cap in hand to the IMF. And if not the IMF, then the BRICS bank, but it ends up being the IMF anyway. So that scenario is, that's rock bottom for us. But it does mean that there will be conditions placed upon how the economy is run. And so for some people, that almost represents like a glimmer of hope in that there will be international interference in how our economy is run. But it might not be the wrong kind of interference. It might be the kind of interference where Lagarde and her people come in and say, well, this is how you run an economy, you idiots.
And the pain from now until then is going to be huge. I see the Rand's already trading at 14.04 this morning. So, you know, kind of where did it start the week? 13.20 or 30-something. And the immediate impact for you is that your money that you're earning becomes less valuable because, obviously, we're an importing nation, and so a weaker Rand gives us higher inflation, and so things are going to get difficult.
And it hits the poor hardest.
Much
this harder. Is the problem, is everybody's talking about it like, you know, if you have Bitcoin or if you're a trader and the JSE is up, then you're okay. But for the average South African, they're not involved in any of this stuff. They just see the prices of everything going up. They just see it becoming more expensive to live worse than they lived last year. And they see 100 Rand from 4 years ago that's worth 80 Rand now.
So maybe the IMF is the solution, but yes, the pain from now until then.
Damning thing to say about us that we have, you know, we postulate like we have sovereignty, but actually we need daddy to come in and like, manage our stuff when we can't manage our own stuff. It sounds like those kids who, you know, declare themselves that they're not a minor anymore and they leave mommy and daddy's house and then they go out into the wild world and it just is too much and they come running back. And we don't want to be seen like that by the rest of the world.
But what an indictment it is on the legacy of people like Trevor Manuel, Pravin Gordhan, even when he was at SARS, who collected like nobody's business, that we are where we are now. How could we take that legacy? I mean, these people turned around a junk economy. We were junk status in 1994. They took this economy and said, we will turn it around. And they did. And we take that legacy and we go back exactly where we started off. I mean, someone should be ashamed here. And I think one of the things that for me was lacking in that speech and is lacking in the political discourse is when Mabala says, where did the money go? Let's be honest about where the money went. We took the chances, we took the gifts that we were given, and we've over just since 2009, we've absolutely, totally, pissed on them. It's absolutely outrageous that you can go from virtually the most unindebted country in the world. I mean, at 27%, we were the darlings of the world. To
a surplus. Imagine having a surplus now.
We now cap in hand. I mean, what kind of conversation is it when we're talking about the IMF and the World Bank? And, you know, I mean, we used to laugh at Zimbabwe when an economic structural adjustment program.
Yeah.
Well, now we're going to have an ISAP on our hands where they tell you, don't do this. I mean, someone is telling you how not to spend your money. But is that what we need?
You know, first of all, of course it's embarrassing and all the rest of it, but this is not the average South African's fault. This is not hardworking people in South Africa's fault.
No.
It's not like we're not productive and people aren't breaking their backs to bring in some income so they can feed their kids and live a decent life. And, you know, occasionally, I don't know, buy some popcorn and go to a movie. It's not as if we're extravagant as a nation and that we're spendthrift. I mean, that we're spending everything that we have. It's bad management.
Yeah.
The people we've entrusted to manage things are not doing the right job, right?
Absolutely.
That's what it is. And we should hold them responsible. I did go to a dinner the other night with Nhlanhla Nene, and he said some very interesting things. He brought up that we were in a very, very bad position in 1994. The economy was a disaster. The then finance minister, I can't remember who it was, Derek Keyes,
yeah,
said, the cupboard is bare. There's nothing there. There is no money left. And we managed to, by being clever, by employing the best people we could, putting the best minds to work to salvage what we could from the old apartheid government, try to put things on track that were not on track. There was huge corruption in those days too, but they cleared it all out. They started building the economy. And people like Trevor Manuel and his boss, Thabo Mbeki, because Thabo Mbeki started working on that stuff while Madiba was cutting ribbons and waving and that kind of thing. These are people who managed to build some semblance of order in an economy that had been chaotic. And we got it right. So it can be done. And we were in a worse position in 94 than we are now.
Yeah, it can be done, absolutely. it can be done.
Oh, but you have the will, right?
I'm probably the oldest person in this room. I mean, I'm the oldest person in this room. So I'll tell you, in the 1990s, when I bought, I remember walking into a garage to buy a car, and interest rates were shocking. They're in the 20s, okay? So you're buying a car because you're junk status. You're buying a car, and your interests are, on every rand, you're paying 23 cents of interest. Boom, 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 boom. So that's how bad things were. And so today I sit there and someone says prime minus two, and it's like, what's that? Oh my God, I'm paying 6%, 7% interest. It's a shocker. But it's because people worked hard. It's people worked hard to turn things around. But the worst things get, you're putting pressure on Lesetra Kanyaho, you're putting pressure on all sorts of things. And you know what? Before long, Sia will be bumping into his motor dealer the next day, and he'll be paying 23% interest. I mean, the thought of it is shocking. It's shocking to the brain.
Some messages that have come in from people who are listening to you, Justice and Anthea. First of all, you're all being very disrespectful to the minister who's giving his maiden budget speech. We should all be much more respectful and complimentary to him. And he looked good. He was wearing a great suit.
He's very eloquent.
Yes. And then someone else says, you don't have to comment on that one. Someone says, I was just on the flight from SAA or SAA from London on Sunday. The screens are still not working. Avi says, don't worry, guys. They have a genius solution to all these problems. They'll just raise taxes again. What do you think of that?
Oh, undoubted, right? In February, here it comes. Gareth, I have a question for you. Is that Russian on your loud halo? Are you learning already?
I know the nuclear deal's coming.
Well, where are we with us and Vlad?
Yeah, well, I saw David Matlobo talking. I couldn't hear what he said because it was a TV on at the gym, and I saw him talking after the budget. Did he say anything important? He's the new Minister of Energy. He's the one who's going to be working with the Russians.
So there are two things that happened yesterday. So in the actual speech, Malusi Gigaba says, you know, as you say, like Derek Keyes, the cupboard is bare. There's no money. We can't do this. If we're going to, in fact, no nuclear, basically. And that's what he's been saying for the past 2-3 weeks. He's been very clear that there's no money for nuclear. So what are we on about? So afterwards, David Mahlobo, our very own James Bond.
That's his theme music.
David Mahlobo walks out of the chamber, and Tula Cesar Similane, who is a fantastic reporter, door stops him and says, Minister, you heard what was said inside. So no nuclear. Oops. He says, what numbers have you been looking at? What are you talking about? Nuclear is still very much part of the mix, and we are going ahead of it. Tula Cesar says, Baba, look, the numbers say the Minister of Finance says no money. So when we say we will roll out nuclear build to the scale, what's this expression that everyone uses? In the scale and levels that we...
Pace and scale.
Pace and scale, thank you. pace and scale and all that. He says, no, the pace and scale is zero because there is no money over there. So and he gets very, very agitated about this. That no, we will do nuclear and so forth. So you have two people. The one who's got the cash to pay, or rather, the one who doesn't have the cash to pay, and the one who says, it's happening, okay, because I've been told so. So you go back to those reports about us on Sunday about, oh, you know, we were told, get someone who'll get this thing going, and clearly it looks like David Mahlobo is there to get the nuclear plan going. And you have someone who says, the money's, we've run out of cash. But it looks like we are going to have nuclear, no matter what the Minister of Finance says.
So this raises a political question. Malusi Gigaba, when he was in public enterprises, was at least there were fingers pointed at him in respect of his involvement with Guptas and all the rest of the state capture apparatus. Let's put that aside for a second, because perhaps he's smart enough to have figured out as finance minister, which is the job he's been given now, that these are things, there are practicalities, there are fundamentals in place that make it impossible for him to carry out the orders of his boss and the rest of cabinet, who probably don't have any, their expectations are probably completely unrealistic, because they don't have to be involved in the income side of things, they're just involved in the expenditure side. So maybe Malusi is now being as realistic as he could possibly be. Mm. Maybe he's applied his mind, and we must give him the benefit of the doubt and say, this guy's trying to sketch a picture of how it really is. Here are the real numbers. And he's trying to say, somebody save me. Because the previous guy tried to save us, he got fired. The previous guy to that, he got fired. The previous guy to that, he got fired. And there's just a complete pig ignorance at the top of how money works. It must just happen. In other words, that this country is now a tool to be used to pay for what has been promised, so that someone can honor a deal that we don't even necessarily know the details of.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a fair sort of representation of what could be the problem?
I mean, Anthea, it's, I think sometimes I think economists and people and numbers people like yourself are. Someone, maybe I'd like to organize a visit for Anthea to visit the president and, you know, to sit down with him and just explain how money works. That, look, I give you pocket money, okay?
You're going to. The sheikhs gave him pocket money. He didn't know how he spent more than he had.
Then the Guptas
gave him pocket money. He spent more than he had. Now Vladimir Putin's giving him money. He's going to spend more than he had. This is not a guy who should be trusted to keep money under control.
We need basic. It's like if there's cake sale at school, okay? There's cake sale. And you know that the teacher says 20 rand per child. So my daughter takes the 20 rand. Oh, cake sale. Oh, it's going to be great. Da, da, da. Now, if she gets there and doesn't say, oh, you know, I want a bit of this and a bit of that and so forth, and goes and buys one, the sweetest, the lots of sugar for 20 rand, she's blown all her cash. Mm. She can't enjoy the rest of it. And she needs to know that. What is going on here is that we know that we've got, in fact, we used to have 20 rand, now we have 5 rand. But we're still saying, I'm going to get the nicest sweet with all the sugar, hit me with it. And it's incredible, but that's what's happening with this thing. We don't have the money, we don't have the need. This is the thing, we don't need that stuff. We've got solar, we've got wind, we've got all sorts of energy
and
sources.
We've been paying a fortune to keep Eskom afloat.
Exactly. So now, and by the way, on your taxes, I think that a massive Eskom tariff is coming through, so we're going to be paying a lot more for electricity. So, I mean, we're getting poorer. Anyway, to the point is, it looks like we're going to pay for nuclear and, you know, the consequences are not there. But to the point about people like Anthea, is that ceiling that Anthea spoke about is being breached by exactly this sort of thing. So we're going to pay for nuclear. Well, what does a guy sitting in New York looking at his numbers, he says, you guys said you'll spend so much, you've already committed to nuclear, so you're going to spend way more than you said you would. And so what does it mean? November comes along, credit rating downgrade. These guys are not even going to wait for the ANC December conference now. They're going to say, well, whatever the conference says, whoever wins, they'll be inheriting the mess that is already on the table.
So then how do I protect the money that is... Why are you laughing?
What money? First of all, none of us have any. Second of all, you're going to ask a question all of us want to ask, but I don't know if there's an answer. I'm just starting to laugh because I'm covering for Justice and Anthea.
How do I protect the money that is currently in my pocket right now? Is there a way for me to make the situation better? Is it a case of me now going on a diet of water and air? I mean, what... What must average South Africans do with the money that ends up in their pockets every month after they get paid? Because you are predicting a doomsday.
If you have money in your pocket at the end of the month, that is a fantastic thing.
Yeah.
Most people in South Africa are actually in debt.
Yes.
And I would say that if you do have debt, you have got to get rid of that as soon as possible. In fact, I think I've been saying that for the last year, maybe 18 months even, because it is coming. It is going to get more difficult. We are so squeezed and we just don't have extra money at the end of the month. So if you do, hang on to your cash and try and hoard as much cash as you can. I mean, you know, I would say from an investment point of view, probably the safest place to put it would be in a money market account where it's a capital preservation fund. And now I sound like a real asset manager, but and where you're not losing, there's no volatility in your investment and that you're earning a nice little interest every month. And that's your
and do not go and buy expensive Christmas presents.
No presents.
No one's getting presents from anyone.
No,
sorry, Christmas is cancelled.
I will give you my love. I will give you my love as a Christmas present.
Santa Gedlehlekisa has cancelled Christmas.
Opening boxes of nothing on the 25th.
I mean, Justice, what are your children going to say when you
say no Christmas? It's over.
How many times can they get that same book?
Yes. I think we should read last year's books, kids.
I mean, we laugh and thank God we've got a sense of humor, but I felt a little bit sorry for Malusi Gigaba. I think he's between a rock and a hard place. This is not a stupid man. This is not a person who doesn't really have, for all we know, who doesn't have good intentions. Let's assume the best about him because he's brand new in the job. And maybe the reality is dawning on him and he's looking at this going, oh my God, what have we got here? And maybe his budget, this medium-term budget, this was a cry for help.
You know, I want to be as generous as you are, but sometimes...
I'm trying.
You really are.
I mean, I posted a picture yesterday of him and I said, this is not a finance minister. This is someone pretending to be a finance minister.
Someone showed me that.
But I mean, that's, you know, I can be as mean as you are, Justice, but I did feel sorry for him afterwards. I thought, oh, this poor guy.
I do feel for him, but I think we all have to take consequence for some of our actions. You know, the news cycle in South Africa is so fast moving that we forget stuff that happens. You know, until Mabala reminded us about Uncle Vlad, I'd almost forgotten about Russia and the stories that appeared in the Sunday Times this past weekend. So one of the things that happened last week is that you had the former CEO of Eskom appearing in the state capture inquiry in Parliament. What was his name?
Brian Dames. There's been so many.
Yeah, there have been so many, yeah. Brian Dames tells a story about he gets called by the advisor to the Minister of Public Enterprises at the time. The guy's name is a man called Siyabonga Mahlangu. Siyabonga Mahlangu says, no, I've organized a meeting with some people. He gets taken to Midrand, arrives, and there's a meeting, and one of the people in the meeting is one of the Gupta brothers. And they say to him two things that stuck with me. Oh, we think we can work with you. You need to know that we can work with you. Hmm. Now, the minister's advisor is in the room, and they're making all these noises and so forth. And that name, Siya Mahlangu, is not the first time. Not you, Sia. Another Sia.
Thank you. I can breathe a sigh of relief.
You looked a bit worried there. that name jumped up at me because it's the same person. There was a CEO at SAA who was taken to the Sachsenwald mansion of the Guptas, where he was told, "We think we can work with you. Oh, by the way, here's 500,000 rand as a gift." By the way, guys, I haven't seen you giving me a gift.
You have our love.
You know, Justice, we think we can work with you.
You have our love. That's good enough.
Our constant adoration.
I want a little bit more.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, that's like that scene from The Godfather. It's one of my favorite scenes where he goes, "Take this gift as a token of my love on your daughter's wedding." You remember?
It's Marlon Brando at his best. Okay. So what do you have? I mean, it's shocking. But
and remember the words that he says. He says,
"Someday, and that day may come, I will call upon you to perform a service for me. Yeah. But until that day, just take this as a gift."
It's a gift. It's a gift. So I think, I can't remember that SAA CEO's name, but he jumps up and says, "What is this? Why are you offering me this?" But this special legal advisor, in fact, he's not special, he's a legal advisor to the minister, Gigaba. And so the question again is, where did the money go? The money went to all this state capture, to people skimming off from the top and all that. So I'm very sympathetic. I think Malusi Gigaba, as I said, I think 10 out of 10 for that first half of the statement, because it gave us the bitter medicine. This is where you are and you are in trouble. But people need to take responsibility.
Do the rest of his cabinet colleagues comprehend the deep well of trouble that we're in? Because even if he's being realistic, I saw MPs and cabinet ministers, because I mean, most of our cabinet ministers are MPs, and most of our MPs are cabinet ministers. We've got so many. I saw them sitting in Parliament, and I didn't see so much as a furrow of concern on the brow of many of these ministers, who are only, again, I have to repeat myself, involved in the expenditure part of what government does. They have no idea that you can reach a point where you can't borrow anymore.
Yeah, it's because people, the concept of money doesn't come close enough to them, perhaps. But I think that there is a huge chunk of the ANC that realizes that trouble that the ANC is in, that 2019 will be a very different place if they don't fix the economy. So yes, I think that, you know, some people had a quick nap. The president did. Jackson Tembu had a little snooze there. A few people did. But I think that they, among those 279 ANC MPs, there is some realization. There are about 100 who think that things can just go on as is. But I think now a majority of people are beginning to say, "I can't do anything if I become education minister with the numbers that are before us." So maybe those voices are being drowned out. I mean, I think one of the things that worries me was how a lot of the decision making that has to be done is now being kicked up to some kind of president's committee.
Hmm.
And it's hollow, but National Treasury has the capability. The Minister of Finance should be making some of these decisions. So you've got a president's committee, then you've got the mandate of the budget mandates being done by Jeff Radebe in the president or someone in the presidency. And suddenly you're shifting around power and decision making. You're creating a massive bureaucracy on top of a massive bureaucracy, and you're starting alternative structures instead of using the ones that you have. So it's a terrible thing. So anyway, to Malusi Gigaba, my thing is, I think yes, he faces a tough task, and I do think that he went into Treasury and he's now sitting there saying, "Oh, wow.
Holy mother of God.
Exactly. What have I done?" But he's been part of the rot. And one of the biggest problems he faced going in there is that people like Anthea and others sat there and said, well, is he part of the state capture project or not? And the overwhelming evidence that keeps on coming out is, guy, you were close to this. You knew a lot of this. And so he had a credibility problem going into this budget. And then he's got a real problem, and that's the numbers. And so if you don't have a holistic approach to all this, you're going to have a problem. Part of the number that, Anthea, you spoke about, that the rent took a beating yesterday, is people saying, I can't trust these guys to look at their numbers. And so the combination of the two. So you've got to work on the confidence. And Malusi Gigaba will need serious rehabilitation of his whole demeanor and his whole history, perhaps, to come back. So I think it's a rock and a hard place. It's a tough one. I wish some of the stuff, I mean, that we talked about today doesn't come through. I think a tax hike is going to be devastating for the middle classes, for the poor. It's going to be hard.
Anthony, any closing remarks from you?
Yeah, I think it was you who asked me that if you are not qualified for the job, would you take it when Malusi Gigaba.
Oh,
okay.
Don't worry.
Got appointed. And, well, it's too late now. He took the job. He's sitting with a holy mess, and he's got to fix it. And as Justice says, we are all looking at the numbers. The only thing we want to see is that you fix those numbers, please. And it's as pragmatic as that.
Thank you, Justice. Thank you, Anthea. An extended version, a special version of the post-budget burning platform brought to you by Nando's. We will rejoin Justice Malala next week. And, Anthea, I've got some other questions for you, but we can get to those on Monday.
Super. Thanks
Fantastic.
Very much.
Fantastic. Thank you both very, very much.
This is CliffCentral.com.